TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I just have one question for you. What do snakes, ducks, and possums all have in common?
They like to play dead, Chris.
That is right.
Yeah.
And apparently they're attracted to black holes.
Well, you know, I'm not sure who isn't attracted to black holes. They're beautiful and quite stunning to look at, you know. I've got to say, I love that Star Trek is stealing from one of my favorite Christopher Nolan movies, Interstellar.
Oh, so. Right. Yeah. That is a good movie. Well, yeah, you can't resist a black hole. I mean, nothing sucks you in like a black hole.
This is true. This is very, very true.
All right. Today, we're going to talk about the fourth episode of Strange New Worlds. This is Memento Mori, and here is a quick rundown. The Enterprise travels to Phenibus 3 on a critical supply mission while the crew observes Starfleet Remembrance Day. When they arrive, they discover that the remote colony has come under attack. And soon they learn that the assailants are none other than those reptilian boogeymen known as the Gorn. Lured into a trap and heavily damaged, the Enterprise must fight for its own survival on the very day that the crew is reflecting on those who they've lost in the line of duty. After deciphering Spock's explanation of their options, Pike puts together a risky plan that involves a black hole, and La'an faces the demons of her past.
So you're saying, Chris, that we've got a little bit of risky business going on here.
We do. The difference here is that the title of risky business is not Latin, and this title is Latin.
It's true. And there, I mean, I was disappointed, too, that Captain Pike didn't slide in his underwear. So,
well, this will not surprise people who listen to me, follow me on Twitter and all. But when I think about that scene, it's Alf sliding in with the sunglasses on and the cucumber yes. that I always see.
Yep. Absolutely. There you go.
From that great moment in Alf. Okay.
Oh,
well,
goodness.
Let's just start by talking about the title, because this is yet another Star Trek episode with a Latin title. We have a handful of those over the course of the franchise. And this one really sets up the story. Memento Mori, basically in Latin, means remember death or remember that you will die. We all die, right? And you see it a lot in creative works. It's an artistic trope that can be represented by things like skull and crossbones or coffins or wilting flowers or anything that reminds you of death. And in the case of this episode, the pins that they wear, you could actually consider those to be Memento Mori. And it sets up the theme of the episode as well as a lot of the discussion that takes place throughout the episode.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was a really interesting episode to do this with because, you know, as we're recording this, it's literally Memorial Day here in the United States when we remember those who have given their lives for our country and for its freedom, and so making that ultimate sacrifice. And so what I thought was great about this is that it's kind of the perfect time to do this type of episode, and it does make sense that the Federation would have something like this
to memorialize
those that have given their lives for peace through the Federation. And I also thought, you know, this episode specifically is talking about the idea of sacrifice and its benefit for others. And we see that for a variety of different characters, specifically with Spock and La'an, and them even having that specific conversation about that idea. And the idea as well is that to be out here, to be on the final frontier, to be doing this job is one that takes risk. And Spock even talks about the idea that risk itself is something that is beneficial to others in many places, because by taking the risks, we're able to help them out. You know, you think of the idea of people who have tested aircraft or any of those kind of things. They're taking the risk for the rest of us, right? And, you know, all of those type of things. I mean, it applies to so many different places in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was just great, because this is very much, you know, obviously right in line with what we'll see Kirk say, where he says risk is our business. And I think that there's a real beauty in just being reminded of that. And I think it's interesting too, because Star Trek has been reminding us of that over and over again. It feels like in the last, year, different episodes of Picard have done that. And I feel like we're seeing this specifically in the Strange New Worlds too now, and I love it. I think it's really important for us to be reminded of that. You know, all of life is risk.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the end, what we're willing to risk our life for is really important. And the beauty of being willing to risk it all for others, you know, you think of the Bible verse that talks about how, you know, greater love has no one than this, than those who lay down their life for another. And that's pretty much what we're kind of playing out again in this episode. That's what we're talking about, that those that are willing to give up their lives for the benefit of others and make that ultimate sacrifice. And that's just a beautiful thing to be reminded of, especially as, you know, again, here in the United States, it's Memorial Day. And, you know, having a wife who served in the military, other people I've known who are actively in the military, knowing that they're willing to do that, it's just a beautiful thing.
Yeah, well said. Risk is very much a theme, as you say, of Star Trek as of late. And yeah, I think it's appropriate for our time. Before we talk more about that, I wanted to mention one other interesting thing about the title. Just for me, as a Japanese speaker, M-O-R-I, Mori, means forest in Japanese. And when I first saw the title, without thinking about the Latin aspect, it felt like maybe a play on words of memento and mori, because Japanese culture is so popular as well amongst creatives in the U.S. And the idea of being a forest and being lost in a forest, being lost in the trauma of the past, being lost in memories of people who you loved who are gone, and the visuals that we get in this episode through the brown dwarf and so forth, where it's sort of a cat and mouse game, it's the submarine game, but you could also picture that as being lost in a forest and trying to find your way back from these things that have happened to you. So that's not the meaning of the title, but just for me, because of what the word mori means in Japanese, I saw that and thought that could be like a clever twist on a title.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to risk, though, let's keep talking about that, because another thing I want to talk about is the trauma aspect and how people are coping with it. But in this situation where La'an has faced the Gorn before, she's frightened of them. She remembers what happened, and she is risk averse in this situation, whereas she wants Pike to retreat to make sure they're ready for the situation instead of charging ahead. So the level of risk that she's willing to accept in this situation is much lower than Pike's, and it is based in part on her memory of what happened to her, whereas Pike, as the captain, is willing to take more risk for what he believes will ultimately save more lives, I think, because that's central to Pike's character at the moment, is he's wanting to avoid deaths. But of course, in this situation, he can't. So what do you think about this contrasting tolerance for risk that we get here between La'an and Pike?
I think that's a really good question. And I think part of that is for La'an, this is driven so much by the trauma that she experienced and what happened to her. And that instinctively taps into her fear center as a human being. And, you know, Pike is coming at this more logically, more level-headed, more reasoned. And I think it's, to me, what it really showed was exactly kind of what ends up happening in the episode, which is that if we allow trauma to just stay in our lives and we never deal with it, we just try to bury it and move on, well, it's always going to be inhibiting us in some ways. And so Pike does not have that trauma, and La'an does, and therefore I think he's able to make a better risk assessment than La'an is, because he's not driven by, and it's not irrational, but it's something that keeps her from being able to be clearly focused, I think, fully on what's at hand. And to me, that's the main difference here in the episode. And I think in all honesty, too, we see, you know, Pike is not making decisions that are reckless or looking to get more people killed. Like you said, he's actually trying to save as many lives as possible. And he feels that the best way to do that is to believe that the Enterprise can withstand this stress that the Black Dwarf's going to put it. He believes that his crew can overcome these obstacles and best the Gorn because they're doing their best. And, you know, I think that's a big difference between the two. And it kind of flows into then what we see Hemmer say, where he says that he's a pacifist, but he's in that pacifism, he's actively protecting all living things. And I think that's really, it's interesting because I think him and Pike are in the same place. They're actually trying to do the same thing, which is they're trying to protect as many lives as possible here in this situation. So, yeah, there's a lot of philosophy in this episode, even though it's kind of also action packed with a lot of, you know, I mean, it's basically the Wrath of Khan here, but with the Gorn and a black dwarf. You know, instead of the Mutara Nebula. So, you know, that's fun too. But we're actually dealing with some, I would say, different philosophical issues, which is great.
Yeah.
So,
well, I've seen quite a few people say that for them, this is definitely the best episode of Strange New Worlds so far, but it's one of the best episodes of Star Trek for them. And I think that might be because we do have a very dramatic action, but well-paced story of survival going on, while at the same time, we do have a lot of deeper philosophical issues being discussed by different pairings of characters. And I think it plays off
character work happening.
And character work happening, which we can talk about along the way as well. I was very happy to see that they found time to talk about Uhura and her journey while all this other stuff was going on. So it wasn't all about the situation with the Brown Dwarf and what was happening on the bridge and between the ships out in space. And they did give her a job to do, pairing her with Hemmer. But while she's doing that job, they actually spend time talking about things that are consequential to the character, not the plot of the story. What's happening in the moment.
Well, and what I loved about that is in that I felt like it was less about Uhura's journey at that point. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, to me, it was more about her helping Hemmer come to a new realization that beginning to trust in other people to help him. I mean, he spent all of his life, you know, learning to do what others would do much more easily because they are not blind. Right.
Yeah.
And he's worked diligently and he's become excellent at his job and there's no deficiencies there. But we still all need help from others at one point or another.
Right.
And to learn to trust other people to help us in those situations is something that's really important. And I think the idea of teamwork and learning to work together is an important lesson. Obviously, for Star Trek, I mean, that's part of what the Federation means, you know, as an organization. Yeah. And at the same time, it's also important for the character. And it's interesting that we keep kind of pairing up Uhura and Hemmer here to have them teach each other things, which is really, I think it's one of those, it's like an odd couple, right? And but one of the things about odd couples in stories is that they help teach each other things that maybe other characters couldn't or other people wouldn't be able to, you know? Yeah. So I love that. Absolutely.
Well, you've got the grumpy old man in Hemmer, and you've got the bright-eyed, energetic young cadet in Uhura. So they pair well together. Yeah, it's a good point about Hemmer. I would point out that certainly in some aspects of his job, he's probably had to overcome things that might come more easily to people with sight because of the visual nature of the control panels and such. But at the same time, I think that he probably has benefits over sighted people by how his other senses are enhanced. He makes that comment in first episode, but also here, there's just that little moment where they remind you of that when they're trying to escape and he says, oh, the door is blocked, right? You know, he can't see the door, but he knows the situation. So I think it's interesting how not having one sense may actually give you advantages in other areas. And I think that's something that's often overlooked when we think about people who are differently abled than we are. So going back to the trauma situation, Risk and Pike, here's another question for you. Do you think that Pike is more willing to take Risk here because he knows that he will eventually be involved in the accident? And also maybe he feels that his future is written. He somehow knows that he's going to be himself up until the moment of that accident 10 years later. And therefore, in situations like this, like he says, the Enterprise will hold together. He's confident that the Enterprise is going to hold together. And as Ortegas says, even our science expert here is saying this is not a good idea. But Pike is confident. That, again, implies that he has faith that things are going to turn out because he feels that he has seen the future. But still, I think there is this question of whether the future is truly written or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. When you asked that question, I was thinking of Pike's quote where he says to Laan that the best miracles are born from the truth. And I mean, is he thinking of the fact that the truth of the matter is, as he Pike knows, he's not going to die today. And so therefore, he believes kind of concretely that, no, the Enterprise is going to hold together. We are going to make it because there's a deeper truth, which is he's seen the future. He knows he doesn't die until that moment that he saw. And so in that, or at least he won't be the man he is today. He's not going to die, but he's just not, you know. So I think that's an interesting thought. It's not one that I had actually put in the percolator and had, you know, let spin around until now. But I think it's actually, it actually makes that statement make more sense.
Yeah.
So I like it a lot.
He may know that he will survive and that the Enterprise will survive. What he doesn't know is who on the ship right now will survive or who will not.
Right.
And so he may be prone. There's a risk in his situation of expecting everything to turn out okay without knowing what may not turn out, what the consequences might be. And you see that here when they have to close off the bulkheads to save the rest of the ship. And he's hesitant, of course, because he very much wants to avoid deaths after what he has seen in his future. But he quickly makes the decision as the captain to close them off because he knows he has to. And Spock tells him, you made the logical choice. And he says, why doesn't it feel that way? And Spock says, for the same reason you made it, because you value life.
Right. Well, and I mean, of course, Spock would say that. I mean, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one.
Right.
And that's exactly what, I mean, that's the decision that Pike makes in that moment, that because it is benefiting more lives and it's saving the most amount of lives possible in the situation. So therefore, that's the only logical decision to make in that moment.
Mm. One other thing about how trauma is affecting the characters that I wanted to get your thoughts on is the fact that Pike and La'an are coming from the same place in that they both have trauma that they're dealing with. But the difference, we're kind of already talking about it, is that La'an's trauma comes from the past and Pike's trauma is in the future. So for them, it's on the extreme ends, and therefore when they're coping with it, La'an is trying to overcome trauma that has really shaped who she is from a kid, whereas Pike is trying to overcome trauma that hasn't really impacted him in a tangible way too much yet. It's affecting him a bit in a psychological way. So I think that's interesting, the two ways that that is being approached. And I think that comes through a bit in the end when Pike and La'an talk again. When I was watching that, it just really struck me. This is in the scene where they're on the bridge and La'an is worried about the Gorn venturing into Federation territory, opening up new hunting grounds. She's very pessimistic. She feels like the Gorn are coming to get everyone and there's nothing that anyone can do. And Pike is optimistic. Pike is telling her that, well, next time they won't catch us by surprise. You know, we'll be ready. So there's that pessimism and optimism playing off of one another through two characters who are both trying to overcome trauma. And it just stood out to me how when we have trauma in our lives, we can really, really get lost in it. And it's very difficult to overcome, and it colors how we see everything around us. And that's where La'an is right now. And Pike, I feel maybe because Pike's trauma is in his future, he feels more empowered to control how it affects him and to control his path more than she does, where she's being controlled more by the experiences.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting question, I think, because, and one of the things that really stood out for me is that La'an, you know, says early in the episode, there's no point in looking back, and which I think is a utter falsehood.
But she's lying to herself there, I think. Like,
right.
That's a defense mechanism, which is actually, I think, mentioned in the episode as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important to think about, because, you know, what it shows us is that actually looking at and learning from and dealing with the history of things is very important. And when we forget it or negate it or pretend like it didn't happen, it doesn't do anyone any good. And so I think they do a great job in the episode of kind of playing this out and showing how, no, she not only needs to, you know, look back, but she needs to look deeply into what happened and come through the other side of it. Other than just denying that basically it exists. And through that, she actually learned something that's really important. She learned something that makes a huge difference now. And she learned something that she wouldn't have learned if she hadn't gone through the pain instead of trying to go end around it all the time, which I think is, again, it's something that's kind of beautiful about that process. And what I do find interesting to me is that I feel like we actually have seen Pike, I think, working to deal with that trauma, right? Is he perfectly in place here? I don't think so. But I think what we're seeing is that he is actually healthier than he would be if he hadn't been dealing with this at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I really do think we are seeing this character actually dealing with what's going on. And so to me, that's really kind of the biggest difference between the two characters. And it's two different lessons,
mm-hmm.
but I think they're both really important.
Yeah. And this idea of La'an maybe trying to avoid looking back because it's painful is addressed in the pairing of Spock and La'an. I really like how in the writing of the series so far, they do pair these characters in different combinations to convey different messages, and they play off of each other well. Spock and La'an being together, La'an brings up the idea of a mind meld, and Spock says the mind meld is not a shortcut for dealing with mental trauma. Resurfacing hidden memories can be painful, even dangerous. And then they go there, and then we learn the story of the brother who we had been seeing since the beginning of the episode, this person, but we didn't know who he was. I thought that was a nice element for La'an, and it explains so much mm-hmm. about things that she has said up to this point in the series. And then they threw in something which, the first time I watched it, I felt kind of like, we have to throw in a Burnham element. We have to throw in a Discovery element mm-hmm. because this was a spinoff of Discovery. But the second time I watched it, it clicked with me right away that this is a great connection between Spock and La'an because of Spock having a sister, La'an having a brother. They each lose their sibling. And in the case of Spock, you know, whether you like the fact that he had a sister who was human or mm-hmm. not, the reality is that's the story that we've been given.
Right.
And so if you look at it really as a character story, the fact that he had a sister who he didn't like at first. He became closer to her. Then she pushed him away. Then they came back together. And right as they were beginning to heal that rift, she's gone because she took a risk. You know, we keep talking about risk today. She took a risk to help others. And he lost her. And he has to hide it because it's all been put off the record by Starfleet as mm-hmm. if it never happened. And all that plays out here in the conversation between Spock and La'an. And I thought that La'an's response to Spock about resurfacing hidden memories really connected well to that. She said, if somewhere within my head is the answer to saving the Enterprise, then that's a risk I have to take. I can't just keep running. And I thought that is actually really good writing because that's what Spock was doing in Discovery. Is he mm-hmm. was running. He had the answer in his head, but he kept
right.
running. And eventually he and Michael took the risk and were able to save billions, trillions of lives, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I don't care, honestly, whether I like it or not. I think it's a valid and important thing to bring into the episode because it 100% has to do with the character, right? And it's to me, it was one of those places where they aren't just like shoving anything into a place where they're just trying to make it work, right? Mm-hmm. No, I think it absolutely works because this is what this character has been through. And so, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a great addition. You know, it was one of those places where I felt like they actually really used the situations that we had seen
mm-hmm.
in Discovery
yeah.
To a really good effect for the story here.
Yeah.
And it was very organic. So,
right.
So I think I've got to give them full praise for making sure, I mean, you know, using exactly what they should be using to tell the story well. So,
well, it was organic because it surfaced as Spock was trying to help La'an and
mm-hmm.
the memories that he was experiencing, her memories of her brother and their situation then reminded him of Michael. And then they pay it off later on when they're out there getting ready to trick the Gorn ship. And La'an says, I'm surprised you agreed to this. And Spock says, I believe it is a good plan. And our mind meld reminded me of risks taken and their value to those who survive. So I thought that they did an excellent job here of tying this back into Discovery. And they did it in a way where if you've never seen Discovery, it's fine. Like everything you need to know is right here in this episode. All you really need to know is that Spock had a sister and he lost her. That's 100% enough. Agree. And if you know more, then it helps even more.
No, I mean, I 100% agree with you. And again, this is definitely coming from, you know, somebody who's not a huge fan of that series. But I mean, this is the type of thing I think you would absolutely want to be using when you're, because it's organic way to connect the characters together when it comes to the idea of trauma. So, I mean, utilize everything that you have on your plate to connect to those characters. And I think, like you said, one of the beauties of what they've been doing is the way in which they've been adding new characters, or putting characters together that you might not necessarily expect would be there, or we working together, but it actually working out really, really well. I think that's another thing that has really been beneficial about this show. And it seems like they're putting a lot of thought into why they're putting characters together and how they're going to work together in the story to make that work. And so, again, I just can't, I honestly can't praise them enough for that type of thing. And I just hope it will continue because that's exactly what we want with these characters and we want with our Star Trek storytelling, I think.
Well,
it really works, right?
Well, we got a dramatic plot in here, but I tweeted this actually when I was watching it yesterday again, that the characters exist in Strange New Worlds so that we can get to know them. I think I said that the writers are proudly saying, we're going to make sure you get to know our characters one by one. The characters are not just here as props so that a plot can unfold. And I think that's the key here is that so far the stories have been character first and then the plot is there to support what they're telling us about the characters.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. So
the next question I have for you is it Gorn too soon? Were you Gorn to die? I mean, the Gorn are here. We have to talk about this because detractors of...
Gorn, you gonna stop those puns, Chris?
Oh, I wish I could, but I can't stop until they're all Gorn.
Yes, that's okay. All right, we're done. Sorry, folks. It had to be done. It had to be done.
It had to be Gorn. So detractors of this series, and really these people are detractors of anything new in Star Trek. It's anything that's new. They've latched on to the use of the Gorn here as being an example of how the writers don't care about canon. But I think that's a stretch because it's like cherry picking one element from a basket that's overflowing with well thought out connections to canon and the original series and every corner of the franchise. But I will admit, and I think I've said this on here before, initially I was not 100% sold on the use of the Gorn. I felt like if it were me writing, I would probably use a different race just so that I'm not muddying the water for many viewers about the timeline and so forth. So I think that the way that they've been handling it, though, has been good. And it does make real sense that there is this sort of unknown, I called them the boogeyman, reptilian boogeyman in the intro. They're, and La'an says in here at some point, like, they're not supernatural. You know, they are there. And the idea that they're slowly pushing their way into Federation space does work in terms of eventually leading us to this one-on-one encounter that we get between Kirk and the Gorn captain in Arena. And at the same time, it adds texture to the Star Trek universe. It gives us a new mysterious villain who I think is legitimately frightening.
It's interesting because, I can see why people possibly have an issue, right? What's fascinating is, you know, we're walking through Enterprise and, you know, we're just about to actually hit Minefield. This is pretty much exactly how that show deals with the Romulans.
Yep.
Is, you know, we make them these kind of boogeymen that, you know, we don't know what's going on with them and who they are. We never see them, which, okay, it's all great in the sense that we never see them. I think that's fine. But,
and they foreshadow that a little bit in Shockwave Part 2 when Archer's in the library and he just opens a book and he's like, Romulan Star Empire, mm-hmm. what is that? And then, you know, a little later. So there's like a mention, like people have heard of it. There's something.
Yeah. And I think the so again, Star Trek has done this before. So this is not necessarily a new thing, which I think is fine. And you know, being a precursor to the original series, I think that this is actually not a terrible idea to kind of look to mine, because I think they're an interesting character species that we have never really spent a lot of time with. And so why not? I don't have an issue with this. I think there's enough that's different here that I'm not like flailing my arms about, why are you doing it? You know, like, I think it's handled deftly enough. And all I would say is that if that continues, that's great. I think the biggest thing is going to be, how does this continue?
Right.
Do we handle this deftly? Or does this become a thing to which it does create that moment where fans are just kind of shaking their head mm-hmm. and being like, you know, you could have avoided this problem if you didn't do this.
Right, right.
I think many fans kind of thought, I would say, in many ways about Discovery, right? A lot of fans kind of issues with Discovery kind of came down to that, where you thought, you know, you could have avoided a lot of these problems if you hadn't done thus and so. And so it will be interesting to see if we can alleviate those issues with this show. I believe they can, because so far, like, I feel like this show has been doing a pretty good job of that. So it's really a wait and see game, I think.
Yeah.
So
I saw a joke on Twitter. It was pretty funny. It said Star Trek Strange New Worlds writers were so focused on whether they could bring the Gorn back, they didn't consider whether they should bring them back. And someone responded with a, you know, gatekeeper or something like that. And then they said, no, it's a Jurassic Park joke. So,
yes, it is a Jurassic Park joke.
I think that La'an addresses it well in the episode when she says, the truth is plenty of people have seen the Gorn. They just don't live long enough to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a good way of addressing it. Now, I do think here that it requires a lot of restraint on the part of the writers and mm-hmm. especially on the part of the creative team doing visuals and such to not succumb to the desire to show the Gorn. You know, there is, I think, mm-hmm. especially if you imagine, what could you make the Gorn look like today? You know, we saw Gorn in Arena. Of course, we saw Gorn in the animated series. But on screen, we saw Gorn in Enterprise, but that was in the Mirror Universe. And it was a kind of a bad baby Godzilla looking thing. Whereas here, imagine what you could do with today's technology
oh, sure.
to render the Gorn. And I think that you could do something really cool. And as a creative myself, there's definitely that urge to want to do that. So it's going to take some restraint to continue to have this. We've encountered them, but we haven't really seen them face to face yet. And I was a little bit worried in this episode, actually, because there was that moment where Pike says that if they want to take us prisoner, if they're going to come aboard the Enterprise, they're going to find one hell of a fight. And then he tells everyone to make ready for close quarters. And at that moment, did you think that maybe Gorn are going to come aboard the ship?
I don't know if even watching the episode, I was thinking that clearly about. I think I was just kind of wrapped up in the episode. Mm-hmm. So in all honesty, I didn't think about that as much. But I mean, I think it would be hard to not question, okay, are we going to show the Gorn, yeah. right? And I'm sure watching the episode, I did think about that a little bit.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm with you in the sense that I think it makes sense to have not shown them and to go that direction. And, you know, if we kind of, it'll be interesting. If we make them kind of this background boogeyman for the series, that's actually kind of fascinating that they kind of pop up every once in a while. And like you said, you know, one of the things that this does is it helps lead us towards what we're going to in the original series, and what we see in the original series is a little bit fascinating. Mm-hmm. Is we have this showdown between Kirk and the Gorn, which will be the first time that anybody really ever sees them in their full glory. I'm intrigued enough, and I feel like the writers so far have been earning my trust with this series. And so, you know, until they make a really just kind of, they could, and hopefully it won't, but yeah, they could make a boneheaded move. But so far, I think, you know, this skirts the line. I would put it this way. With us talking about Enterprise, I think this is a much better use of the Gorn than, say, the Ferengi. In Enterprise, oh, yeah. where it's like, yeah, clearly you did not, that was just a choice that you made
right.
that didn't need to be made
sure.
and kind of created issues where there didn't need to be issues. Yeah. So this is not that.
Yeah.
So thank goodness. And hopefully that'll continue. Yeah. So,
well, speaking of Enterprise, let's not forget that eventually we do see Romulans. We see Romulans, mm-hmm. but our characters yep. don't. So you can always... Yep. still handle it that way as well.
Absolutely.
You mentioned full 100%. Glory there. Made me think of Lady Gaga and Gorn this way. Sorry, you set me up for that.
yeah. Goodness. I'm sorry, folks. So I apologize for that. I was unintentional. Absolutely unintentional.
All right. Well, let's wrap up with our final thoughts and ratings. What are your final thoughts for this?
You know, what's great is that I feel like this is another really solid episode of this show. I just feel like it's been doing a great job so far. I have no complaints. I think this was a great episode of giving us an opportunity to spend more time with characters, character development, world development in the sense of Star Trek. You know, again, I think with using the Gorn in a way that didn't break canon or anything, and it gave us some interesting things to talk about. But really, in the end, you know, like Star Trek Picard, Chris, I'm really finding that Strange New Worlds is doing a good job of creating characters to which I want to spend time with and I want to know more about. And I think, in all honesty, to me, that's just really what makes good television. You know, there's nothing worse than, you know, I like this show, but... I don't know. Do I really want to spend time with these people? Do I like these people enough to want to spend time with? Like, that's always a really frustrating thing. And I don't think that's happening in this show, which is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so just hoping, praying in all honesty, that continues. Because if it does, I think this show is just going to continue to get actually better and better. And so to me, I don't think this is the best episode of the series so far, And it's definitely not the worst. It's just, it's a really solid, really good, really, I think, well done episode. I'm very much enjoying it. And so I would give this 4 out of 5 Gorn hatcheries.
Oh, wow. That's actually a very high rating, because think about how many eggs are in those hatcheries.
Exactly. I mean, it's just endless the amount of things that are in those hatcheries. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, for me, I really love the episode because, as I mentioned, they do a great job of balancing intrigue mm-hmm. and adventure with introspective philosophical discussions. And there are other elements in here that we didn't talk about that I'll just mention as part of my final thoughts here. I liked the concept of the light flashes for communication between
ships. That was interesting.
And I think that it was a clever way of connecting La'an's memories in the past with what's mm-hmm. happening to her now.
Yeah.
And using that to find a solution. I got really worried right away when Mbenga said that everything in sickbay is offline. And I thought, is his daughter okay in the pattern buffer?
Yeah.
I'm a bit worried about that.
But we know, at least I think they did a great job in explaining that the transporters the last time, they have backup redundancies like crazy and stuff. So, you're absolutely right. I did not even think about that. But oh my goodness. Yeah. We got to find that girl, a cure soon, because she's got to get out of the pattern buffer.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. She needs to get out of there. And a couple of great moments with Spock. I thought one of my favorite moments of the episode was when Spock said atmospheric density is decreasing. I believe the singularity is advancing. It's accumulation of substellar material. And La'an just says, do you ever speak in plain English? I thought she's channeling like everyone who's ever served with Spock and everyone who's ever watched an episode of Star Trek.
Definitely channeling Bones.
Yeah, for there, sure.
Which was fantastic. I was like, sure. Oh, that is exactly what Bones would have said in that moment.
And another great TOS mirroring, I thought, with characters, when Spock describes what will happen if they keep going deeper, and Pike says, great thinking, we need to go deeper. And Spock says, that is not what I suggested. It felt just like a Kirk-Spock exchange to me.
It did. Yeah. It did. You're absolutely right in that.
And the last thing about Spock, a couple days ago, actually, I watched the James Bond movie, No Time to Die. And of course, they use Q-Dar in the movie. Mm-hmm. And here, when Pike says, you just turned a compass into radar, I thought, it's Spock-Dar!
Yes,
we have Spock-Dar.
Yes, that's great.
And I think
it's a great connection.
All ships should have Spock-Dar from now on.
They really should. In fact, it's funny because as we're recording, I've been reading the book for the next Literary Treks and Flaming Arrow, and Spock is actually trying to figure out a way to upgrade the sensors for this. They call it Gamma Knight, and so sensors aren't working. So he's trying to figure out a way to do that. And it was just really funny because we're absolutely trying to do the same thing in the book. Everywhere we need Spock to create new sensors some new form of being able to sense things when, of course, they're not working the way they should. So classic, absolutely classic.
But just remember, Matthew, Spock, he does not create sensors. He creates sensors.
That's right. Sensor. Oh, my gosh.
All right. So, I loved the episode. I thought it was great. And I'm going to give it 4 snakes, 3 ducks, and 2 possums.
Well, I mean, goodness, you've got a menagerie there. So, and we know how much Spock loves a menagerie.
Exactly.
So.
All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Memento Mori. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. If you're already a member, you know how it works. But if not, just type Babel, B-A-B-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And once you're there, you'll see on the timeline there will be a post for this episode, and you can share your comments with fellow listeners and Matthew and me right there. You can also send us email if you prefer. Just go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and that'll come to us by Pony Express. And also in social media, Instagram, Twitter, everywhere, our username is TrekFM, and we'd love to hear from you there. Now, Matthew, when you're not helping Himmer replace all the defective rods down in the cargo bay, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, that's taking forever. But when I'm not doing that, you can also find me here on the network with a bunch of different shows. Of course, the 602 Club, which is our whole other side of the network, not having anything to do with Star Trek, but all of those other fandoms that we just can't get enough of. So we hope you'll check that out. And of course, you'll find me doing a bunch of shows with you, Chris. We've got Literary Treks, the books and the comics of Star Trek, where Casey and I are doing that, and you're on occasionally. We're doing Warp 5, The Orb, and The Artificial Tango. Warp 5 is about Star Trek Enterprises, we talked about. The Orb is about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And The Artificial Tango is about Star Trek Picard, as we just wrapped up season 2 there. And we've got some fun things in store for that, I think, in the off season as well. So keep a weathered eye out for that. You can also find me on social media under the name MattRushing02 all over the place. And then last but not least, you can find me over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One I did with Drea Kaufman is a completed show. We talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then I'm doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills, which is a Star Wars podcast, and I definitely hope that you will check those out. But Chris, when you're not trying to figure out what Spock said on the bridge earlier today, where can people find you?
Well, that takes a lot of time and a lot of brain power. So after I do that, I need a little period of recovery.
But probably like a nap or something.
Yeah, like a nap, something like that, yeah. But when I'm done with that, you can find me, as you mentioned, on all of those shows that you and I do together. And then also Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time. There's Interphase, and I'm in many episodes across many shows in the back catalog. So if you'd like to hear more of my thoughts on Star Trek, just check those out. And if you'd like to chat with me in social media, my username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to chat with you there. Now, if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help through Patreon. To find out how to get involved, just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And we really want to send a huge thank you to everyone who is supporting us right now. We would not be here without you. The show would not be out here in your podcast player right now without that help. It takes a great deal of money to keep all this going. And so thank you very, very much to everyone who is supporting us. And if you're not, I do hope that you will come on board. So thank you, everyone. Well, Matthew, I am going to go take that nap and recover before the next time we need to saddle up. And I am looking forward, though, to talking next week with you about the next, what I'm sure will be a great character story on Strange New Worlds.
Chris, I'm looking forward to that too, so saddle up and lock and load.